Give you a brief summary of the articles that were included in the newsletter this month. And there were six this month, so bear with me. I'll try and go through them quickly to give you an overview of what's in the articles, especially for maybe some of you who didn't read them. And then after that, we'll spend the rest of the call in discussion and sharing about what we got out of that. So article one, is called Your Purpose is at Risk of Being Pointless. It's written by Denise Lee Yon and published in Forbes. And the article says that purpose is more important than ever in terms of what society expects and to enable employee engagement. And the article suggests three requirements about how to set up a purpose and to do that well. And those are to have a single purpose, to get stakeholder buy-in, and to operationalize purpose. And that operationalize part in particular talks about the design of the organization. Article number two, well, actually number two is a podcast, and it's one of the episodes from the Skills for Mars podcast, which is a whole series of information about organization design. And this one is called Redesigning Work, and it's with Naomi Stanford, who's a member of our curatorial board, Milan Gunter, and Matthew Skelton. And it covers a whole range of issues that are related to remote work. And these include organization design for remote work. They have a conversation about the meaning of purpose versus values versus culture. Organization redesign for companies moving remote. Innovation and transformation by design in remote setups. And at the end, they also talk about what would be the successful organization of the future. The third article is How Digital Natives Are Influencing Traditional Organization Design, written by Matt Watt at Ernst & Young. And this article explains that digital natives, meaning organizations, not what I thought, which it's that they are people, but these are organizations that have been established with digital systems and they have not needed to transition from legacy systems and ways of working. And the article attempts to examine what are the differences. And there's a lot of areas that it brings up, like capabilities, structures, roles, and resources. But the short summary is that the article states that digital native organizations adopt flatter and more agile structures, but corporate culture plays a crucial role in success. Article number four is called Build Back Better and Organizational Resilience, and that's published in the Nobel Academy website. And they try to give a more concrete meaning to the phrase build back better. And they present it in terms of organization resilience. And then they put forward a model of what that can mean and describe four areas that make up that model, being democratic, distributive, regenerative, and responsive. And then for each of those four areas, they go into what are the traits and what are some real life examples of companies that meet those criteria. Article number five, is your organization ready for permanent work from home? And this is in HBR, written by Maxim Sitch and Lindrid Greer. And this article gives really the awareness, talks about the awareness that some work now can be remote and that's opened up some advantages to the way we design our work, like cost and time savings, access to remote talent. And the article presents a kind of a step-by-step transition of how to make that move in a systematic way. And then finally, this month's articles included a bonus, another podcast, and that was from Leadermorphosis, and it was an interview with Amy Edmondson, who probably everyone knows is very well known for her research on psychological safety. And in the podcast, she talks about her research on psychological safety and teaming. She shares insights and practical lessons on leadership, on teamwork, and on the future of work. So that there is the summary. And what I'm going to do next is, you know, there's a few questions that I want to ask you. And if you have ticked the box, if you've ticked yes, that you want to be an active participant, that means that I'll call on you to share your perspective. You can also say pass if you don't have something to say in that moment. Don't worry, I'll still come back to you for another chance. And for those of you who said no, or you wanted to be just an observer, I'll also open it up and give you a chance at a few points in the call to say something. So I just want to check, because I didn't hear from everyone. Stephanie, do you want to be an active participant or just an observer on this call? Stephanie Diaz.
She pinged in and said that she was going to observe today, as okay. did Valentina in the chat. And Dave Jamison also did the same. So I'm thinking those who didn't mark anything are intending to.
Okay, great. Today. Yeah, okay, good. I just had Stephanie on the original list, so I wanted to check. Okay, great. And, and Nadezhda as well will be an observer, I think, right?
Indeed.
Great. Okay. So the first question that I have for you all is, what are the themes that you picked up when you read the articles? And I'm going to start us off with Craig today.
Okay, there. Get on mute. But, you know, I there was a one theme around designing remote work. But I think broader than that, it was just that there are new organizational models and new organization forms. You know, there's the digital work, you know, there's the remote work, there's the resiliency. So it just seemed like this was a looking at exploring different types of organizational models and organization designs that are different from what we think of as traditional models.
Great. Thanks, Craig. Let me go next to Joel.
Sure. Hey, Jody. I think for me, one comment is a lot of like big ideas, like the resilient organization purpose. It feels like we're trying to think bigger on this stuff. Everything that's going on. My second observation, though, I think is that a lot of this for me comes back to fundamentally we're dealing with a loss of control. I think Naomi spoke about that a little bit in the podcast and there was a good discussion, but I just think a lot of these and the work from home, it's sort of like the literature, I don't know, we're like responding again to this feeling of not having control, and how do we make sense of that? Whether that's through individuals, whether that's through organizations, but kind of opening up. I think it was Naomi in the podcast or someone who said, maybe that's the one thing that sticks, or the hopeful thing, that the emergent nature of all this sticks with us. We don't try to put things back in a box too quick. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that kind of control theme resonated across.
Yeah, I'm seeing lots of nods as you speak. Yeah. Let me go to Miriam.
I would build on that in the sense of, it feels like we're trying to design for a shifted essence of what work is, and that sense making and trying to figure out what work looks like, what it can look like, what it needs to look like, and the gaps between maybe getting back to what we were and what we are, just sort of different ways of thinking about that. And that idea of control, I think, really, in some ways, felt artificial in some of the articles, sort of like artificially trying to prop up a sense of this is the structure we can put around this so we feel better. So, and others felt very liberating and open. So,
Interesting. Thanks, Miriam. Arnold, how about you? What were the themes that you noticed?
Well, I think they were sort of all, you know, various responses to the disruptions that we're seeing, you know, whether it's disruptions in work that's being, you know, the result of working from home and virtual work, or social disruptions, you know, in, that we're all seeing, you know, particularly here in the States. And I think, you know, each of those was looking at it from a different sort of perspective, whether it's about resiliency or whether it's about, you know, redefining the purpose of work, like in Naomi's piece. But, you know, my takeaway was about disruption.
Thanks, Arnold. Chris, over to you.
I like what Miriam said about artificial control. I probably don't have a big theme because I didn't get a chance to listen to the podcast, but Joel's just made sure I do that this evening. I'm certainly going to listen to the one around redesigning work with Naomi and others. So I missed the podcast, but I like that point about artificial control because of the four sort of, you know, the red articles. There was this point of, are we still trying to characterize the answer? And that kind of frustrates me when sometimes I'm reading some of these articles and it's a little bit too simplistic in terms of, and of course, if we all just did this, then, you know, wouldn't the world sort of post-disruptive, post-COVID look a lot better? And I think at times, you know, a couple of the articles were maybe a little bit simplistic around, and that's the bit I like about Miriam's point. So just to reinforce that, I think that idea of artificial control, I like that.
Very nice. Thanks. Yeah, and I want to say welcome, Pavel, because I think you just joined us a little bit late. And was there anyone else who put their hand up or wanted to be? Yeah, Mike, go ahead.
The theme that emerged in my mind as I was reading these articles is, what's an entrepreneurial response to change? Because if you look at purpose is how to focus, if you look at technologies in terms of working from home, that's an entrepreneur response to changes in technologies. And I particularly like the article in terms of how digital natives are influencing traditional organization design. So in all cases, they seem to be coming at, here we're faced with these changes. And how would you, as an entrepreneur, be flexible enough and understand how to approach these changes from an entrepreneurial mindset?
Thanks, Mike. Interesting. Is there anyone else I missed who was in the active participant list? And then would anyone else who was in the observer role have something that you'd like to add or something that came up during the discussion? Okay, no problem. We're going to get a little bit deeper and get to the interesting stuff now, to dive deeper into maybe one or more of the articles. And the next question is going to be answered via a poll. But the question is, which of the articles did you like most, the articles or podcast? And you just need to choose one and click submit. And then we're going to see which one got voted first. Okay, so I think everyone can see the results now. We have a winner, which is Build Back Better and Organizational Resilience with 44%. Before it disappears, I'm just noticing that Redesigning Work was second, and then Digital Natives was third. Great. So the question is, who voted for the Build Back Better article, would you like to share what was the reason that you liked that one?
I can share, Jody. I think I clicked that. I may change my mind later once I've listened to the Naomi podcast. But so I like this one because I read it twice. Sometimes a success measure for me as an article is when I read it the first time and go, hang on a minute, that really made me think. I'll go back and read it again after a cup of coffee. I thought there were large parts of it that were quite pragmatic. The thing I probably liked the most actually was in one of the first two sentences, which was says, can we get a grip on what we mean by better? So unless we have that real clarity about what it is we're sort of trying to do, then we struggle. So I like that point. I know it's really simple, but define better before we, before we try and do anything. I like that. Certainly the second time I read it, I like this idea of being able to sort of have maybe this, maybe mixed mode of operating. It's not one thing. It's potentially multiple things going on. So this idea of this Venn diagram example of if resilience is in the middle and that's topical at the moment, I get it. And then there's these different aspects of sort of adaptability and regenerative. And I guess I'm a bit of a sucker at the moment for energy, and there's therefore people energy, certainly with some of the work I've been doing in the last 6 months. And this idea about a regenerative organization, I thought really struck out for me, which says, how do we create work where there is enough moments where we can sort of revitalize energy and regenerate ourselves? So rather than things feeling like a sort of a constant process or a transactional thing, what are the sort of defining moments where, small or big, we can sort of give people that, that burst of regenerative energy? And that speaks to a lot of work I've been doing lately. So I like that. I like that article for that point.
And Chris, I didn't vote for the article, but I agree with you that I found it interesting from the standpoint of the four dimensions that they talk about. And with each of those dimensions, they talked about traits or characteristics to build into the organization. And it's just not just one of those dimensions. It was really kind of a multidimensional view on a pretty robust view on what you need to build into an organization to help it, like you say, build back better.
Yeah, I picked it too. And I think, the bottom line thing I loved about it, I just thought the language felt, or the frame felt, very timely. I mean, it just was, I think, to your point, who just spoke, Craig, those dimensions were all speaking to topics that seem extremely relevant today, but also it just had a different feel than so many models that probably we've all recycled and seen a lot of different times. So I just felt like it was a way into a conversation. I could imagine working with a leader on that and considering those different domains and then thinking about some of the interdependencies. And then Chris, to your point, I kind of liked it ended then. It was sort of very high level, but then it got practical, I thought, in a non overly simplistic way, and just had some good insights on where to go from here on this. It didn't feel like it was a model where you had to hit, do great in all dimensions. It was just about more of the relationships. So I just appreciated the language of it.
If we're really appreciate everybody. You were first.
Nadeshda. Okay, Miriam, go ahead, and then you, Nadeshda.
Well, I think just building on what you all have been saying, what I really liked about it was just how they unpacked some of these dimensions that sometimes get very forcefully communicated. And if somebody's really a strong advocate of, like democratic over regenerative, and sometimes it gets very, there doesn't seem to be room for the other dimensions. And so I liked the fact that there's this possibility of this more of an interweave that you could consider.
I was also the one who picked this article, really just adding to what everybody said, the language, the timeliness, nice unpacking of the terminology or descriptions. I also found it interesting to look at all these dimensions as a lens to look at our organization and some work that's we're currently doing with some other members of the forum related to treating organizations as living systems. Actually, and this regenerative dimension to this really spoke to me. So it's more organic, more ecological language that essentially contributes to organizational resiliency and sustainability as part of the resiliency. So that's why I chose it.
Thanks, Nadezhda. I'm going to ask now, actually, if someone had a different opinion, maybe there's someone who didn't vote for that one, and if you saw it differently. Well, it seems like those who read it had a fairly similar perspective on it. Same for me too. So that's great. And I, when I saw the poll results, I deliberately read out loud which was the second and the third to help me remember, but that didn't work. So I wonder if someone or Tanya can remind me which was the one with the second most votes, because that would be great to talk about a bit too.
The second was redesigning work.
Yeah, right, the podcast.
The podcast. Yeah, okay. I'd love to hear about if someone voted for that. What were the reasons that you liked it? Craig, were you one of the voters for that one?
No, actually, I wasn't. But, what I did appreciate about that is they came at the topic from slightly different perspectives. Each of them had a kind of a different take on that. And I thought that was useful and helpful. And the other piece of it is kind of their conversation on purpose. It really helped complement the first article around purpose of the organization and the importance of that piece of it.
Yeah, thanks for that. And what about others who listened to the podcast? What were your takeaways?
Yeah, just on that point of purpose, I loved in the middle, or I think we're referring to the same thing, when they sort of looked at the word purpose from French and German. And I just thought that was cool, because you think about that in these words, and just the French idea almost being much, I don't know. I mean, it gives you just how this language can translate differently. So I just really, that was I liked that too. I'm glad you called that out. That part of it really stuck for me. That was the main thing. I'm trying to think of other stuff, but I kind of lost my notes on that one, which I'm bummed about, because I took a bunch of detailed notes 3 weeks ago. So please, others, jump in and refresh my memory.
Something I realized when you were talking, Joel, is that when I read the first article and it talked about purpose, I think it was that one, and it talked about the importance of having a single purpose. And that, for me, that kind of, I was kind of thought, no, that's, is that really, why not have multiple purposes? Did anyone else have a point of view on that one?
I certainly had a reaction to the article, Jody. So less about the podcast, because as I've mentioned, that's definitely on my list of things to listen to tonight. But yeah, the article, so the article, the one part of the article that I did like was this whole idea about operationalizing purpose and what that really means. So rather than something just being a statement, is how does it really sort of find its way into the sort of more detailed design elements of the work. But I think we probably all read articles that err on the side of sort of purpose washing, the fear of, if we don't have a purpose, then we're all doomed. But then perhaps to your point, Jody, and maybe back to Miriam's point around the sort of artificial control, is this our ability to control a purpose, not just an illusion? And an actual fact that we could do a great piece of work with a leadership team or a team of, and then teams of teams, and you figure out, maybe to perhaps one of your points, Jody, is, are there not multiple purposes going on? And even if we were in a space of illusion that said we'd perfectly crafted this wonderful purpose statement, and it comes with a degree of marketing around how important it is, does it really change what and how the organization operates to the point of maybe traceability all the way to its customers? That does a customer sort of really feel that? I like the point about operationalizing it. I got frustrated as it was sort of talking about purpose washing. And if I can go off piste just for maybe 30 seconds, promise I'll bring it back. I actually picked up a slightly different blog on Twitter the other day, where somebody was somewhat deconstructing Simon Sinek's Golden Circles YouTube video, and was actually sort of questioning whether what he talks about is true, and is it really about why a brand does exist, and you know, all about purpose, or is it actually a marketing job, which says Simon Sinek's a very good salesperson in terms of getting us to believe that this is an idea. And it sort of made me then react when I read the article this month about purpose is in actual fact is defining the purpose and articulating it important? Probably. Is operationalizing it important? Yes. But actually, how do we sort of live and breathe it and sell it, live it into the organization? This article that I picked up about that was somewhat deconstructing Simon Sinek actually added a lot more value to me, because it was about maybe this is it erring on the side of sort of marketing rather than it being heavily linked to strategy, and maybe it's both. So I went off piste. I'll try and come back to, we were talking about purpose, right?
It's okay, but you might have sparked some curiosity about the article you read. So if you can find it during the call and put it into the chat, that would be awesome. At least you already sparked my curiosity.
Don't tell Simon Sinek that I sent it to you, right? I will post it in the chat here.
That's what we're here for. We're here to question and challenge even the established thinking.
One more thing I just wanted to add, because it's really like talking about purpose. One thing that really stood up for me in that article is that how nowadays whatever you're claiming as your purpose is really transparent to all the stakeholders. And the companies are actually being called out on not living their purpose. That is something new that didn't exist several years ago. Now you can communicate with the brand directly via social media. All the work incidents spill over to the public space. And now with this public availability and transparency, it is a whole different level of accountability for the company when it states its mission, purpose, statement. That was like, oh yeah, indeed.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation, and it reminds me that it's not so long ago, I would say up until about 3 years ago, I frequently heard people in organizations say, yes, but our real purpose is to make money, you know. And I haven't heard anyone say that for a while. Maybe they just know they shouldn't say it, but it's an interesting shift. I'm just checking the time, and I think we still have time before we go to the next question, because I'm quite curious about the digital natives article, which I think at least someone put forward as their favorite article. So would someone who really enjoyed that article like to share a bit with us about why?
Yeah, that would be...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike, and then Craig.
I really liked the article. I liked the way the author, Matt, broke it down into questions. What I've always found in the work that I do, that the questions are really generative in terms of they have the power to move the mind to think differently. So I really liked how they use the questions. And what I normally do when I read an article is I use my experience as a sounding board to say, is this relevant or not? And at one point I was working, establishing a self-directed consulting practice within BP North America, and at that time was known as Amoco. And I thought this was very thorough in terms of touching the key elements that guided us through that process of organizing ourselves, finding a purpose, operationalizing our values and our purpose into the work that we did. So I really thought it was very good for those reasons.
And what I liked about it is it was pretty practical as far as guidance around how to do or what digital native companies were different. And there were things like there were five ways, you know, hire for mindset, not skill set, you know, obligation for innovation, everyone is in customer service, feedback and learning, and connected teamwork and org design. So there were just some basic principles that you wanted to instill in the organization. And you can call it culture or just ways of operating, but they kind of broke it down into some pretty practical, discrete things to be thinking about incorporating into the organization.
One of the things I also liked was the fact they actually addressed the whole issue of risk management. So whenever you're dealing with innovation, let's say, for example, what we found ourselves was in a situation where we want to expand our product offering. And so, but what we had to do is do it in a way to protect us financially so we were still financially viable and we're earning our keep within the corporation. So there's an overlap between risk management and your financial model. And then there was the whole idea of innovation. How do we innovate in such a way as that we can experiment, try things out, minimize the risk in doing that, and then pick the things we wanted to innovate around that really would have a payoff for our financial metrics as an internal consulting practice. So what I liked about it is they actually introduced that and they started to talk about how those things might overlap.
Yeah. And the thing about the risk management too is they were not promoting disruptive change necessarily. They really talked about looking at small incremental innovations, a lot of little experiments that you could still keep some control over, but collectively provided some sort of innovation culture in the organization.
Yeah, I know when we were in our situation, what we did is one of the first things we looked at if we were picking a target to innovate is one of the first things we did, we looked at the marketplace to see what unmet needs were there. And so that linked to the financial model. And then we figured out, well, how can we manage our learning this, our going through the learning curve in such a way as we're not putting our customers at risk? So again, that's that customer focus model coming in as we picked our targets, where's the need? And secondly, what can we assume in terms of the learning curve and how can we protect our clients as we're going through that learning curve to bring about the innovation needed by our clients? So that was another aspect that I liked that was pointed to in the article.
Thanks, Mike. Looks like Nadeshda has something to add.
Yeah. I was planning to be an observer, but this article really resonated because as someone who spent 90% of my career in digital natives, what two things, personal reflection that came to me after reading this article. First, actually blind spots, because when you're in it, you don't really see it. So I recognize that, oh yeah, that's right. That is common. That is widespread practice. So taking for granted things because you're born in it or you spend so much time around it, it's no longer a distinguishing trait. It's a new normal. Mm-hmm. And second, how much idealized digital natives are, because in reality, it's a big, huge mess. lacking structure, lacking direction, people running around, experimenting, failing, learning. It's a whole different dynamics as from what I experienced from more established corporates that more than 100 years old, where I also had experience working. It's just different level of energy and exchange. And in this article with all the beautiful insights, and I really like that it was written in terms of hypothesis and assumptions that were validated and with key insights, I still think that it's pretty much idealized on how the perfect digital native company could be, feel, operate like, because in reality, there is lots of things that don't go according to the plan. So these two things were very interesting to recognize for myself.
You know, I had a question also. As I read this article, I didn't think this was necessarily just limited to digital natives. In my experience, I've come across people who think like this, and they're not necessarily digitally sophisticated, or at least they weren't at that point in time. So some of these attributes I found apply to people who aren't necessarily digital natives. Does anybody have a comment on that? That's my impression anyway.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that as I was reading it as well. So I felt like their message was, these are the things that we've found are existing in digital natives. But I guess it would follow. You could build on that to assume that if you are able to create those attributes also in legacy established companies, that it could be also a good thing. Or maybe that's what we're aiming for.
Transition there too, around from pure digital native types organizations, but then how do you build those characteristics or qualities into traditional organizations?
There's an interesting, I don't know, there was a conflict in my head with the two articles around the Build Back Better, which I really liked because it gave me some options that I could play with, versus this digital natives one that was, I agree there was some good stuff in there, but I come to this tension as well, which is how rare do we come across an article that says let's learn from Uber, or let's learn from how Facebook does business. And of course, if you were to write an article about those guys and interview them, then they're not really going to turn around and say, to your point, it's chaos. You know, a lot of what we hear is all the good stuff, and I find myself going, I don't think that there's a perfect answer in there. What are the trade-offs in order to work in that way? What's the difficult stuff that we need to accept? And certainly the organizations I've worked with in the last kind of year, 18 months, maybe aren't willing to trade off that. You know, they sort of, maybe they see it as that idealized thing, as you describe. They want some elements of it, some of the principles that Craig's described, but right the way back to the start of the call, maybe one of these themes around the illusion of control. They still want to be able to control some things. So they're stuck in this sort of tension between, I want some of that, but I'm not willing to give up this bit. So where do I play? That's the thing that I found difficult about the digital natives article, is it seemed to point me towards something that said, here's an answer.
What I'd really like to do, jumping in, so we're getting quite deep into lots of articles, which is excellent, and we still have another 15 minutes. I'd like to do the final poll question, which is, which of the articles caused you the most tension?
It appears people are having to think about this one. Got to do a tie so far, 4 votes. Give it a couple more seconds. Going once, going twice, closing the poll.
Hey, let's see.
Yeah.
It's a tie. Okay, so we've got two articles to talk about here. Your purpose is at risk of being pointless, and how digital natives are influencing, which is great because those two articles already started to have some energy in this discussion. But hey, first I just want to ask, why was it difficult to decide? Anyone, any comments on that? Are the articles all so great that it's hard to find one that brings tension?
Well, I think for me, is I appreciated that each article had a different perspective. And so I think I appreciated that in the collection of the articles. And I could understand, you know, what the each article is trying to pose it. And I really didn't have a problem with the key point or the key premise of each of the articles. Mm-hmm. But the tension I had with the digital natives is it started out as pure digital native, but then transitioned into, but here's how you develop that digital native characteristic in a traditional organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's spend a few minutes to stick with that one and hear about the tensions in that article.
I think I just want to build on what Chris shared before. For me, digital natives lacked the trade-off perspective. So it was not really balanced with here is the price you pay for having this. So for me, it felt way too polished, way too idealized. And as much as I could recognize lots of these signals and the way digital native culture manifests itself, in reality, there is lots of things coming together with this. And this tension, I think, was not fully addressed for me. And as such, it somewhat creates even the false picture for those who are willing to rejuvenate their organization or try something new or to build the capabilities they observe from the side. It doesn't give the full, like, true real picture of the chaotic interactions of things being dropped and other things. So this is where I would like to have more real examples and the trade-offs.
Thanks for that. Welcome, Michelle. Are there some other comments perhaps on that Digital Natives article? And then we still have a few minutes left to talk about the purpose article. Are there any comments from people that we haven't heard from for a while, or any of our people who are in the observer role?
I'm not an observer, sorry. I should wait. I just had a comment though.
I think it's fine. I wasn't sorry. Getting... No problem.
You know, I think I've just been reflecting on that article more, and I think my tension was I really pushed back with the title. I just don't like the term digital native. But then as I read it, I appreciated the whole doing versus being digital, and then some practical ways to actually be working for a large company that embarks on a lot of digital efforts and transformation. I appreciated the thesis, but I don't know, there was something like exclusionary at the beginning of digital native. So I know that's sort of been said, but that was my tension. And I found myself picking up more steam as it went on. But that was just, again, something I was sort of wrestling with. I had one other point and I lost it. But and I don't know, this is just a hypothesis. And the person who spoke earlier who's worked in these settings, I've worked in some smaller companies, but I find these types of organizations are a little bit, even though this was about organizational design, they're less obsessed with org design. And maybe that's healthy. And there's some shadow sides of that, but you know, they're just the innovation, the products, that's where their energy goes. And I think that probably creates its own set of problems and dynamics, as was alluded to. But I also find that liberating and healthy. And I'm sure there's politics, there's all that, but just the org design movements and decisions and swing the pendulum back. Maybe it happens anyway, but I don't know. It's just a hypothesis. They're just a little bit less obsessed with org design.
Yeah, and I wonder if that depends on where they are on the business life cycle.
Yep.
At the very beginning, of course, you're small. And you're trying to find something that meets a need, and you might occasionally have to pivot and stuff. But once you think you've got a sweet spot, then you're looking to scale. And I think when you're looking to scale, that's when it starts to shift. And then org design and more specialization, those things come into play.
And you're right, that's what then holds them back, because when you're so product technology focused, you avoid that. So it's hard to then see that as a lever of power. But I find it healthy too, and sort of focusing on, but yeah, that's fair, good point.
Yeah, one of the things when I was working a little bit in acquisitions is we would acquire at Abbott Labs these very innovative companies. And what Abbott brought to the equation was the ability to move it into the marketplace, to commercialize the product and to bring it to scale. And that was a very interesting transition to try to move from a very entrepreneurial firm and try to preserve the best elements of that as you started putting it into the meat grinder of this huge, large organization that had very systematic ways of doing things. So managing that transition. So we decided, I think in one firm, there were certain attributes why we acquired the firm, other than the commercializing a very good product. There were certain aspects of how they operated that we wanted to learn from. So we put them off to the side and didn't incorporate them directly into the larger organization because we figured we would kill it if we did that. And we wanted to be able to observe them as a laboratory sufficiently long enough to understand what is it about their culture, about the way they do business, that we want to hold on to and find ways to migrate in that into the rest of our business. So it's very interesting when you start to look at that.
I like that that description there, Mike, has brought up attention that I didn't realize existed until you've just described it in that way, which is with the digital natives example is the whole organization doesn't need to work in this way.
Right.
And actually, the tension that I find is, but there are parts of the organization that do and could and should, and all the other words that you might add in there, you know, is it's a good idea, basically. The tension with that sort of article that I have is, okay, so that might work for a particular part of the organization. The frustration in the article is it always comes back to technology. It always comes back to sort of product line alignment. I'm looking at a different side of the organization to say, okay, so how would you set up a back office finance function operate in that way? How would the sort of core of the organization that churn a lot of sort of operational things work in that way? And is there a way of sort of bringing some of those principles to bear around? So if we weren't organized around products and we were organized around customers or something else in a different way, what might happen? And that sort of brought up attention in your description for me, which is, what does this look like as a bit of a mixed mode operation in that your whole organization doesn't need to be mimicking what some of these digital natives are believing? That's just an opinion I've got.
I think Stu Winby and some other folks talk about the ambidextrous organization,
yeah,
where you do have this part of the organization that very innovative, you know, responsive and that type of thing. But then you move a product or a technology into more of a scaling mode, and you move it, actually physically move it into a different part of the organization. And those two organizations operate very differently.
I've been letting the conversation continue with digital natives because I think it seems really interesting to talk about.
Jody, I think we digress into a lot of different topics. So.
Well, yeah, and I think the conversation is really interesting, and I'm learning from it. We can continue a little bit in the chat. Just before we finish up, because we have a few minutes left, we still had the topic about your purpose coming up as one also with tension in, and we have discussed it a little bit, but would someone have a few more comments on that article? And I guess I'd add something, you know, I'd add something here, which is there seem to be a lot of discussions for me that are, you know, with different definitions of what purpose really means, you know, and in some conversations, it turns out to mean, you know, doing good in the world. That means you've got a purpose. And in other conversations, it can be, you know, what's your agenda or what motivates you? What's your individual motivator. So I found that, the article didn't really clarify for me what was the meaning of purpose when they talked about having one overriding purpose.
Yeah, and I'd echo that point, Jody, in terms of not trying not to repeat what I said earlier on about the whole purpose washing thing, but when should we be talking to our people about purpose and when should we be talking to our people about outcome? And I like the description, and that really, it actually got brought up in a EODF session we had in June where we had Tesco, the retailer, come and share a case study with us. For those of you that don't know, is Tesco would say that they were driven through COVID-19 response by the catchphrase, feed the nation. And I've pondered on that for such a long period of time, which is, is feed the nation a purpose or is feed the nation an outcome? And in the case study that they bought, people were using the term interchangeably. And that's the tension that sort of arises with me is really the difference between, you know, do our people want to talk about purpose and why we're here and the sort of deep meaning behind that? Or would they actually prefer a conversation of what are we actually trying to achieve in terms of an outcome? So those are the two things that frustrated with me with the article, because it didn't talk about, I think, the richness of outcomes.
You know, Chris, I'd like to build on that as well, because when we were putting together our consulting practice, we deliberately chose to focus on outcomes we intended for our clients. And that helped us get to a more singular purpose. So I think they're linked. And I think it's in purpose to look at, very important to look at outcomes when you're considering what your purpose is.
Yeah. Tesco is a great example of that whole, you know, that one statement and trying to figure out what that means. And we have to wrap up because we've got to the end of our session. So I think I don't have anything on my list that says there's one more thing we have to do at the end. So Tanya's going to let me know if I have to do more than just say thank you very much, everyone, for joining and contributing to the really interesting conversation. And hopefully we'll see you here next time or perhaps at the EODF conference.
Appreciate everyone's time. And I will send out a note when the recording and anything in the chat that we wanted to upload is available.
Thanks, Tanya.
You're welcome.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.